This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, good morning, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it's Sunday, September the 4th, and it is way early in the morning after just a few hours sleep, and we're back on our way to the airport, actually, with Banachek. Hey there, Banachek.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Fantastic, thank you. We're driving, we're talking, because I haven't had a chance to talk with you because you had such a busy day yesterday. We were just catching up on a bunch of stuff, and I got you first at the airport. You kind of flew in just for the day, lectured, did the show on a couple hours sleep.
2 hours. Yeah. I was in Minneapolis at University of Wisconsin in La Crosse, which is kind of like in the middle of nowhere. It's a great school, beautiful school, fantastic students. Had about 600 students showed up, so it was a nice, decent-sized crowd. But I had taken a red eye to get there, and I can't. So you know what? I've never learned how to sleep on red eyes. If I could do that, I would be golden. But at my age, I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Not now.
No.
It won't.
Yeah, so I flew in there to Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's about a 2.5-3 hour drive. Went over, did that show, so I had no sleep the night before that. Maybe 4 hours sleep or something like that. The life of the entertainer, you know?
Boy, that's for sure. Yeah, I think it's all glamour, yeah.
So I got on a plane, and I had to be at the airport at 5 a.m. So I got done with that show close to midnight. I had to drive all the way over. Well, actually, it was about close to 11 o'clock. Drive all the way back. And then I had to be at the airport at 3:30 in the morning. So,
and now we're going out early now because you've got a flight.
I got three shows over in Dallas, which is kind of sort of nice. I'm relocating to Las Vegas, so after I get done with these three shows in Dallas, I will fly to Houston, get a U-Haul, and then drive the how many hours? 20-some hours to Vegas.
I'm gonna miss you. I mean, I'm probably gonna see about as much. I'm gonna see
the left two lanes to turn left.
I'm going to see about as much of you once you move to Vegas as I probably am now.
The same amount. Yeah, if not more than likely. So, because I'm always going out of Houston, you know, working shows, traveling and things. In fact, we're passing a hotel right now called the Omni Hotel. And my friend in Dallas actually runs a bunch of the Omni Hotels. But that hotel there is where I kind of got my start doing comedy clubs back in the day. And I think you guys came out to see me.
We did.
Yeah. And I was with Charlie McFarland.
Yep.
And maybe Richard Hatch worked it with me too. Mm-hmm. And I used to do it like twice a year, but that's kind of how I got my start in comedy clubs on purpose, because I wanted to be able to work any sort of situation, and comedy clubs are fantastic for that, especially out here in Texas, because the agent that I had, Sharon Jerry, who also ran the Comedy Workshop, you know, and a lot of the big greats got their starts at the Comedy Workshop in Houston. And they had all kinds of clubs. I wore comedy clubs where you basically had the steel cage in front of you because people would throw things, beer bottles and stuff at you, which I never had that experience.
Just like at the Blues Brothers.
Exactly. No, it was exactly like that, you know. So, and then there were other ones which, and it's all oil refinery areas and stuff like that as well.
Here's
so
it's the blue collar work.
You work the worst of the worst. And you'll be around the corner where nobody is with a kicker pole. But for those that don't know what the kicker pole is, the kicker, it's a country pole in the middle of a dance floor that people dance around with nobody around the corner, and you're around the corner and you say, hey, come watch me, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, it was the worst. I learned how to deal with any sort of situation.
I know that you had a lot of heckler lines and things, and in your early years you said some things that kind of surprised you, but I guess in your working situation,
you know what, back in the day, I cringe when I think about some of the things. I remember one time I came out and Dick Hatch had come out and see the show, and he walked in the room and the very first thing he heard me say when he walked in the room to somebody was, hey, if I wanted any more shit out of you, you know, I'll unscrew your head and dip it out.
Yeah.
And that was, but that was like the extreme, like the really extreme, because this guy was bad, you know, but of course, Dick walks in and had no clue, you know, all he sees is me doing that, and he's like, oh, holy crap. You know? I mean, because normally the way that I handle hecklers is I let the crowd handle it for me.
Yeah.
If I've seen somebody heckling somebody, because I was always a headliner, but if I saw somebody, you know, heckling, say, the opening act and the middle act, I knew they were going to heckle me, and I would come out, and I would just simply say, ladies, you know, the person would start right away. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I could have a battle of wits with this gentleman right here. I really don't want to do that. So I have a show here that's an excellent show, and it's a show that I'd like to show you. ladies and gentlemen, would you like to see the show that I put together to show you, or would you like to see the show that this gentleman wants that's between me and him in a battle of wits? Which one would you like to see? You know,
yeah.
And then I want to see the show that is the professional show. And so the crowd will kind of shut that person down. And I didn't care if that person got pissed off and walked out. That was great, because now we could have a fantastic show.
Right.
It was fine. So usually management in most of the comedy clubs are really good about getting hecklers out of the room while talking to them. But not always, you know. You do have that idiot as well who will answer his phone in the middle of a show.
Yeah.
And talk really loud. Oh, yeah, I'm at a show right now. And it's in the middle of the freaking show in a comedy club, you know. It's just...
Now, well, do you ever have that kind of situation, I mean, in your shows now that... I don't mean now necessarily like during Supernaturals, those kinds of shows. I would think that whenever you're doing a corporate thing, you don't have a lot of people who are heckling you because they're paying you.
No, in corporate gigs, you normally don't unless it's the CEO of the company. And then you've got to be real careful how you handle that because he's the one that's paying your check.
Yeah.
So, I'm really careful. I usually bring that person up on stage, try to make them sort of a bit of the star, even though they may be a bit of a jerk. And I'm really good at being able to handle those people. You know, it's interesting because I had always said, I don't think in my entire career that I've ever had a show that's been a really bad show. Like a really bad show. I've had shows where I go off and go, oh God, that was awful. But it's because I know the things that didn't work, but the audience didn't. The mentalism in itself was good enough that they were impressed by it.
Sure.
But it may not have been what I want. However, just recently, I think I've had a really bad show. And that's because I'm working a thing where, and talking about that, with hecklers and stuff like that, I'm working a situation where I'm working some resorts where people may have been drinking all day long because it's all-inclusive resorts. And you may be in South America or you may be somewhere else, but it's an all-inclusive resorts. And you've got an entire corporation that comes in, but they're there to party. So they drink all day long.
Right.
They drink the hour during dinner before you. They drink the hour during the show that's before you.
Because it's all free.
And then it's all inclusive, prepaid. And then they're drinking during the show when you're performing. So you'll end up with some people who are really, really, really drunk and just don't give a damn. Plus, because it's all inclusive, they think they can do whatever they want.
They basically own you.
And you're just kind of a side thing for entertainment for these people. And you cannot put these people in their place. Well, first of all, it wouldn't do any good because they're so drunk anyway.
Yeah.
But even if you do, you cannot put them in their place because they've paid a lot of money to be at this all-inclusive hotel. And the all-inclusive hotel, they don't care. They let these people sort of do whatever they want to do because they're paying customers.
Right.
So I've had a couple of bad shows recently, but it's the environment and it's expected, you know. But in those,
when you say a bad show, like what specifically has happened? I mean, just what specifically has happened that made it a bad show? Was it just the fact that they...
Just the fact that they are drinking and
they can't pay attention to instructions.
They decide to sit in the front row and talk as loud as they want, be on their phones.
So they kind of ruined it for everybody else.
Ignore the show, do whatever they want, they ruin it for the rest of the crowd.
It wasn't like that they stabbed you with like your...
knives or anything, no.
Did you do that trick?
I have done it with drunks, you know, and it's just... yeah, it's a little scary sometimes, and sometimes people don't follow instructions, and for that particular effect, they have to follow instructions. So I did have one show where I just finally had to dismiss the person in the middle of the performance. I just had to go, you know what, dude, just go back to your seat.
Because they were too drunk?
Yeah. And just screwing around and trying to mess with me, you know. It's like, I say, my job, you know, if you feel uncomfortable in any way, let me know. You know, I have a section in my show.
Right.
I'm going to try and make a person feel a little bit uncomfortable. And the moment I said that, big guy on stage says, you know, I'm going to make you effing uncomfortable. You know, you're going to be uncomfortable. Oh, you're going to be really uncomfortable by the time I'm done, you know. And it's just like, dude, you know what? Just leave. just go.
Yeah. Well, now you also just a couple weeks ago finished a run at Foxwoods with the Supernaturalist.
Yes.
Is that right?
Supernaturalist at Foxwoods. It was good to get back with the team because we've been on hiatus for a little while. So that was sort of a one-off.
And you had a new escape guy, a person working with you, isn't that right?
We did. Actually, well, we have Landon Swank. Landon Swank has always been our front man. He's been our illusionist. Spencer Horseman is no longer with us. He's back at his bar, and he's, you know, he's working his own career. He's doing his own thing. You know, he's a really nice guy. But he was not with us on this particular run. But
who else was there?
Landon went into the tank and did a fantastic job. Really did a fantastic job. Didn't quite stay in there as long as Spencer, but it was just as dramatic, you know, in that as well. Because, especially for me, because I know how long Landon can stay in that tank, and he was pushing it.
Yeah.
Who else was on there? Kristen Lambert
was back. She had been off for a while. And the reason Kristen had been out is because she had torn her
ACLs.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes. It's too early in the morning.
Well, you're pointing at it, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And who else?
Who is your
comedy person or juggler?
Oh, that's Angel. We don't have a juggler, but we do have a comedy person. That's Angel and Penny Wiggins. Penny Wiggins is from The Amazing Jonathan Show. We got Adrian Vager, who's our close-up guy. Stefan Vanel, who's our card manipulator, who gets standing ovations within the show itself. Who else do we have? I know I'm leaving somebody else. There's Johnny Dominguez, who's our big dog act. He's the only dog conjurer of the entire world.
Wow.
And with that particular show, I think I've mentioned it before, we, Chris and myself, we basically took the acts and built them from the ground up. Even Stefan Vanel, who had a fantastic card manipulation act, award-winning act that he did at the Crazy Horse, we didn't take that act. What we said to him is, what can you do? We sat him in a room, he told us everything he could do, and then we would say, well, what about this move and this move? Oh, yeah, I can do that too. And this move, yeah. Okay, well, here's the music we want you to do it to, and we want you to do this, and this, and we created an entire new act for him. Yeah. And it took him about 6 months to get it. I didn't think he was going to get it because he's so used to doing the old act that he did.
Right.
He does sort of a...
Had to rework it.
Yeah, he's a dancer too, you know, so he does sort of this Mexican dance thing in his regular act as he's performing. So I used to have to get on the ground, hold his legs in place, and say, don't move, you know, as he was doing it.
Stay planted.
So it was extremely difficult because it was, you know, he was a duck out of water, basically.
Yeah.
And now he has the act down pat. And like I said, he gets standing ovations too within that performance itself. It's a fantastic act.
Speaking of shows and everything, getting back to the TAOM for just a minute, as we get closer to the airport here, that you also were starring in last evening's Magic Island show, and that was just such a fun show, and it was good to get everybody kind of back together who were the performers. What did you think of the show? Everybody was working there last night.
I thought the show was fantastic. It was long, but it was
a 3-hour show and went like 15 minutes. It seemed like it was.
It didn't feel like 15 minutes to me, Scott. That's very, very kind. I don't think it felt like 15 minutes to you either, but that's kind.
I looked at my watch. You went exactly 25. And I
thought, did I?
Yeah, exactly.
Man,
I had a stopwatch on you.
Can we edit that out?
But it was really fantastic. Closing with Michael and Jessica.
Oh, they're fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the rhythm of magic.
I got to tell you, doing
the street,
then turn left at the International Drive. Doing that show brought back a lot of memories. Hearing Scott do the little bit MC bits and everything.
Yeah,
that back in the day when he used to do it, we go, come on, Scott, get another line, you know. But now it's like
they're classics.
You know, you go back and you go, man, it brings back a lot of memories. You know, that Scott,
I was giving him standing ovation just for his lines that he was saying again.
Yeah, so yeah, and remember the fact that he remembered all those lines. You know, it's
after saying it so many times.
Amazing. Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter. I've had things that I've said for a long, long, long time.
And you kind of,
and then if I don't do them for like a year or something like that, because I'm doing some other sort of a gig, like working on TV shows or something like that, and I go back, it's not that easy sometimes to recall that right away. You say it a little different. You know, I've looked at old videotapes, and I think, you know what? I haven't changed that routine at all. And I go back and I see an old videotape and go, my God, it's completely different. And that's funny. Why don't I use that line still, you know?
It was good then. It still is now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're talking about the comedy clubs and working then at the Magic Island because you were the house mentalist, the first one, and then later Jay Schwaus had taken over. But then you started doing some stage shows and everything.
Well, I'll never forget. So. I mean, when Scott first saw me do a stage show, it was years later, many, many years later. It was right before it actually, Magic Island closed down.
Late 2000.
Yeah, and I did the stage show. And this is interesting because a lot of agents, when they book you for a close-up, they don't book you for stage, and an agent that books you for stage doesn't often book you for close-up because they kind of don't think you can be good at both things, you know, or whatever it is. They've got in their head, this is what you are. They pigeonhole you and put you there. So I used to work the close-up room, and I know Scott, Atari, you know, they used to always bring guests in to come see me, you know, in the close-up room. And
these guys were the owners of the Magic Island, by the way.
And I used to have my act was an award-winning act that I did there, Mendelism act. And when Scott finally called me one day, he didn't have anybody do this stage show. He says, hey, Banachek, he says, you're in town. He says, would you come and do the stage show? And this is towards the end. So I come in, I did the stage show, and he goes, why didn't I ever hire you for stage? I don't know, Scott, why didn't you ever hire me for stage, you know? He said, that's fantastic, you know, I should have been hiring you for stage. So, yeah, it's funny how people put you in this one slot where they keep
it. It is true, whenever that you do a show that they have seen you, whether it's a close-up or stand-up or comedy or mentalism, whatever it is, they have that box. And I think it's the same way like with television. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but I know sometimes that you will pitch shows or whatever, and they have another idea. They say, well, we want something. Well, I can do that also, you know, or we can tweak this.
What does that
say?
Well, and sometimes it's as simple as, you know, you got producers, and TV producers are the worst. You know, they have, I hate to say this because TV producers are probably going to hear it and then say, I'm never going to get him or anything. But they'd have no imagination. And I think part of it is because that job comes and goes so often.
Oh, yeah.
They're afraid to do
There's
something.
There's no seniority there.
They're afraid to do something a little bit different. And that's why when you see on a cable network show, when a new show does finally make it out, and it does well, all of a sudden all the networks are doing that same kind of show. Like Inc., you know, all the reality shows like the Kardashians, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
They all start doing those type of shows because they're afraid to do anything
change the mold.
Else.
Once
so when you come in, they might say, I really, really like that, but we don't like the red box, you know. Well, what color do you like? Blue. Well, I can make it a blue box.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? We really don't like that red box, you know. Well, I can make the red box a blue box. Yeah, that would be great, but we don't like that red box, you know, I'm sorry. And it's like, but I can make it a blue box, you know. And it's like they don't hear it because they're so locked into that one thing that they saw, and they're afraid to make that change. So
yeah.
We're at the airport.
We are. We are here already. I'm going to unload you already. And that. Thank you very much. I know you've enjoyed. You performed at the TAOM a couple of times and lectured here before, but you had a full house. Everybody. We have
and a completely different lecture this time.
Notes and everything.
Yep.
It was there then as well. So good luck to you on the shows over here. Thanks a lot.
Hey, look, thanks for picking me up. I really appreciate it. And I really just want to say to everybody out there, you know, Scott, you're like one, if not my best friends. And thank you for that. You're always there for me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. That was Banachek giving a little testimonial. Thank you, buddy. You know, I feel the same. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Well, good morning. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we have just started with the first activity that I'm attending here this morning. After I dropped off Banachek at the airport, I went back and took a nap. And so we had the Gospel Church service this morning and then the general meeting, and right now we're about to start the David Stone lecture, and as soon as he gets his microphone, then I'm going to have to go up and introduce him. But I've got with me David Thomas right now. Hello, David.
Hello.
And good morning, I guess I should say.
Good morning to
you. Did you get much sleep? How are you enjoying the convention?
I love it. But yes, I got plenty of sleep. If I don't get my 10 hours, I'm done. So.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm kind of with you.
There you go.
I do like to have a lot of sleep.
I've been at 10:30, slept about 8:30, and I got my 10 hours.
Yeah, at these conventions, though, I usually give between 4 to 6, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, after I'm putting together the podcast and everything. Now, David Thomas is kind of a common name, so a lot of you might say, well, I know David Thomas. Wait a minute. His voice sounds different. It's not the David Thomas I know. You're the one from Oklahoma City.
The entertainment capital of the world, Oklahoma City.
Outside of Nashville. You're number one, aren't you? Or number two, are you?
Our bars are staying open until 10 o'clock now at night.
Until what time?
10 o'clock.
Oh, p.m.
P.m.,
okay. It's not just after twilight.
No, we used to roll up the carpets at 9, now it's 10 o'clock, so we're hopping there in Oklahoma City.
And you were best known in the entertainment business by a lot of magicians because of the theme parks, that attractions that you had done. Tell me just a little bit about that background.
Well, in a nutshell, I started at a little theme park in Oklahoma City in 1977, performed there, and in 1989, a gentleman named Gary Story and Karen Burke bought the park. They bought other parks, then they bought Six Flags chain. So I kind of grew with them, and I started producing all the shows for Six Flags worldwide until 2005-06.
What happened to the guy who was doing it before? I mean, did he move on? Did he retire? Or you just kind of grew into it? They said, we want you? Or what?
Well, the first one...
I'm always curious to hear stories.
I forget his name, but his name was David Blackburn. He actually started the theme park performing industry entertainment in 1950s when Six Flags Dallas started.
Yeah.
Well, he passed in the 70s, and then of course they used other producers. I know Paul Osborne was heavily involved with the production in the 70s and 80s.
That's right. He was with the Six Flags organization.
Yeah. And then I took over really for Six Flags in 96 and 95, 96, and then produced till 2006. Now, I did much more than magic. Magic is, I always had a magic show at the parks because it's a great.
A big illusion show.
Yeah.
Because for theme parks, you have to have big stuff, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of dancers.
Well, it depends on the size of the park.
Okay.
But we'd always have a magic show, but we also had the Batman stunt shows, we had musicals. I mean, I produce all those type of things, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you train outside dancers? I've heard before, like, you know, college kids are looking for summertime work, and so you, mm-hmm. did you train them? You had a choreographer, or do you do it yourself?
Trained dancers who are in college,
correct?
Singers, so they're very good at their craft.
In
They've been
theater.
Performing
mm-hmm.
theater majors, and then we actually wrote the show, produced the show, built the sets. You know, I don't want to say wrote the music, but you know, we would use music music that was hot in the public domain, whether it's a 50s show or a 60s show, 78, 80s, whatever.
Right.
And then we'd record it for that show and arrange it,
right.
And then. Had a choreographer and a director, and we produced the show.
Well, I've heard before also that sometimes the magicians who have been hired have been like dancers. In other words, they weren't magicians. They were just kind of acting the part.
Yeah, exactly. We always hired musical theater majors.
Okay.
And
who understood theater, which is very important.
Yeah,
a lot of magicians
yes,
don't.
Yes, and since it's an illusion show based, we were able to integrate dance and we would always teach them, you know, easy things like the hypno wheel, mm-hmm. the filler stuff would okay. be things that were easily taughtable.
Yeah.
But it was mainly a big production.
So it wasn't like someone who was featured saying the great
no.
Bozo or whatever.
No, it's the world of magic or
yeah.
it's magic.
It's generic.
Or, yeah,
okay.
Abracadabra, it's magic.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
so you never really had. Well, as I recall, though, many years ago when we had the Six Flags in Houston, that Rudy Kobe and Kevin James had come through, and they were staying with me for a couple of mm-hmm. nights, and that they were part of the Fright Night show.
Right.
And so they were not really billed as Kevin James necessarily, but they were in different parts of the park doing different things.
See, Halloween was a different animal.
Okay, then.
Because Halloween tended to be, yes, you had to hire professionals, because you're only open for 12 nights for Halloween.
Oh, that's
right.
And
it's hard to build a production show that takes 2 weeks of rehearsal and amateurize it over 12 days. So we would always have about 126 days in the operating season.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 126 days of running every day, then you produce a production show. Halloween tended to be more pros.
Contract people.
Yeah, contract pros to come in. Because they come in, they do it, and they head out.
In and out.
Now, in Houston, I don't know if you remember, we had Odyssey. I had the Odyssey show, which was the big fantasy show, a big, huge production. For that, I brought in Les...
Oh, Arnold?
No. A magician out of Vegas. We actually brought him in, and he was actually...
About ready there, David?
Yeah, I will do my opening from there.
Huh? From here? Okay. Yeah, we got David Stone here.
He's getting ready. Sorry about that. Okay. You didn't know you were working. Sorry.
That's okay.
That's okay. There's a good magician here. You need to be talking to him.
I'll talk to David later. We got two Davids here surrounded left and right.
Are you aware that you're supposed to introduce me in 35 seconds?
We're now? Okay. I didn't know for people. Okay. Well, you said you want your light and sound. You got your light and sound? You ready?
Yeah.
I'll finish up with Mr. Thomas then a little bit later. We're all going to go. Okay.
We'll talk later.
Okay, David.
All right. David, I'm looking forward to your lecture.
All right. That was David Thomas and David Stone. We'll talk again later. Scotty out. All right, well, David Stone's lecture was fantastic. My gosh. Aldo Colombini was one of these lecturers who always had creative ideas and would come around every year with completely different ideas that he would present at lectures. And he just seemed to be a fount of creative knowledge. Carol Fox was the same way. And most clubs, for an example, will only book a lecturer every 5 years. In other words, if somebody's been through, then they can go another 5 years, you know, because we've already seen him, you know, like last year or 2 years ago. But they would always take Aldo Colombini a second time, like the next year, because, hey, we know he's got whole new stuff and he's a lot of fun. He's entertaining when he performs. And David Stone, I think, is in that tradition of a lecturer. So he is somebody that just awesome. Seemed to be very entertaining, very creative. He had a lot of new ideas. He kind of brought out some of the classics that that some people who had never heard his lecture did. So anyhow, that was a tremendous lecture. Just my quick review of that as we go back now with another David. This with David Thomas. And so David, kind of we were talking still about theme parks and that about the types of people that were hired, that you hired, not necessarily for magicians.
Yeah, I'm always asked by magicians why I didn't hire more magicians for our shows. And the reason was pretty simple. We had to live with a very strict budget within the Six Flags regime. Mm-hmm. And normally we had to run our shows 126 days, and that's spring, summer, and September before Fright Fest.
Yeah.
About 126 days. They had to run 7 days a week, usually five shows a day. Mm-hmm. And they were highly production-oriented. It's very, we found it's very difficult to find qualified magicians that would work with the parameters of $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. And that was the budget to pay a performer, $10 an hour.
Wow.
And
because that was what you were paying, I assume, like a dancer or whatever,
dancer,
else. It didn't matter if they were a dancer or a box jumper,
a singer,
or
and the thing about
or
it
the
is,
quote star.
Exactly. And the thing about it is remember, our performers we had in Six Flags had been dancing and singing since they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
They went through high school. They were all performing majors, either a dance major, a vocal major, or in college, or a musical theater major. And they were just a year or two away from going to their dream of auditioning on Broadway.
Yeah.
And so the talent was incredible.
Yeah.
And to them, they could, in the summer, work, hone their craft. Now, back to what I said, there was never any budget for housing.
Hmm.
So when
it was $10 an hour, that was it.
Yeah, magicians would call me, and yeah. I'd say, I'd love to hire you. Here's the problem. It's $10 an hour.
And
you
got to
travel
for
here.
Lodging.
You got to pay your own lodging. And they went, oh. Now, it was a little different Halloween. In Fright Fest, we would hire pros because it was only 12 days and there wasn't a budget to actually produce. So it really became a part of the situation. And most people cannot do five shows a day, 7 days a week. So we had to train a swing.
Yeah.
And another person in case somebody got sick.
Plus the equipment. I would think that the illusions had to be built super heavy with literally good hardware and everything because it was used over and over. It's not just a pretty box.
Yeah, I mean, it's
retouching the paint and everything all the time.
Our theme park shows were just like a Broadway show.
Yeah.
As long as you have the talent, you can learn the lines, you can learn the songs, learn the dance, and be the star of the Broadway show. Now, there's always an understudy that's got to be there in case the star gets sick. So it became the situation where that Paul Osborne and I were doing the same thing, and Paul and I never talked to Paul about it, but the same philosophy. We had to hire actors normally versus magicians. And it does not slight magicians at all. I wish we could have.
Yeah,
but
a matter of budget.
Yeah, just a matter of budget.
Right, right. Now, as you develop with the theme park, and then Six Flags kind of came and went, and mm-hmm. as far as they don't have one in Houston anymore, and that all
right.
changed and whatnot, and you evolved, and also you went from what to what?
Well, I was starting in 1995 or 1996, I can't remember, I became the executive producer for all Six Flags worldwide. During that time, Six Flags went public. In 2006, there was a corporate takeover, so we were out and the new group was in. So,
okay.
till 2006, I produced everything, and it was a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling a friend out earlier, you know, in the corporate world, your gigs come and go.
Sure.
You know, that's just the way it is.
That's the way it is. Yeah.
And now I've transformed my business into, I tell everybody I'm semi-retired now because I do what I love. I still have a couple of theme parks I produce for every year. I also produce for other magicians.
Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of good equipment. I mean, things we're using on stage over here, I assume that those are your lights and trailers and backdrops?
Well, the backdrops are mine. C.J. Johnson actually provided the lights and sound.
Okay.
I brought sound, but CJ had plenty. A good friend of mine, Joe Romano in Washington, D.C., is renting some props for Fright Fest at a park in Maryland because I'm kind of known as the guy with the props. So, you know, I don't rent them out unless it's my friends that I know will take care of them and get them back to me,
yeah.
you know, because, but But I do a lot of that. I do some corporate work. David Hire and I now are touring with a show called Art and Magic and Performing Arts Theater.
Tell me about that.
Well, we, our niche is the 8 to 1200 seat theaters that we're not, we don't compete in the big theaters with the Illusionists. I mean, they're the big boys. They're doing the 3,000 and 4,000 seaters. We are in the smaller arts and presenting market. Kevin Spencer was in that market. He is retired from that market.
Did not know that.
And he kind of...
He's working overseas more now?
Well, he's doing a lot of overseas work. He's still doing some, but he's
focusing... Like church work, I guess.
Yeah, he's focusing now. He's still doing some performing arts centers, but he's focusing on the healing and magic.
Yeah.
He is graciously... has pass the mantle onto us.
Oh, nice. Oh,
and it took a couple of years because many magicians came to Kevin and said, hey, we'd love to do what you do. And finally, after a good long relationship building where he began to trust David and I, and he finally said, okay, I'm going to recommend you. So he's on our promo material saying, hey, these are the guys to talk to.
You know? Yeah.
So he was the major player in that market for 20, 30 years.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And I think he's gone on to better things now. And
so you're kind of taking over that void, filling
it. Yeah, taking up that void. And it's a smaller theater. But it's wonderful because we are able to bring most of the performing arts shows in that market cannot bring the production value that we bring.
Now, along that line, I just heard yesterday that Andre Cole had sold his touring show to somebody.
I didn't know that.
I think he's got somebody now who's doing something almost like a Darren Brown mentalism type of a show. So this other guy is touring around, I guess. And so you don't know anything about that?
Well, yeah, but no, I don't know.
Okay, that's
kind of a different market. It was sponsored by the
churches,
so and stuff. And what a wonderful market.
Oh,
Andre Cole, what a great show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear he's not touring.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I think he's just probably reached that age. It's kind of like, you know, I think I've had it. And Tim, his son, is doing something else as well. And so I think that this other guy has come around. And so he's going to be performing, I think, in Dallas coming up soon, and then going to be in New Orleans. And someone was saying, hey, we need Mark Holstein. But Mark Holstein, you know Mark? Mark has been the stage manager at Colon at the Abbott's get-together for like the last 30 years or something. And he is like best friends with Marshall Brodeen, used to live up in the Chicago area and everything. He's here.
Marshall Brodeen?
No, Marshall, sorry. No.
Wow. I want him to sign my hand or something. I love Marshall Brodeen.
He is a tremendous guy, you know.
Yeah.
I wish him and Mary, his wife, the best, you know, on the issues that he's having with Alzheimer's. That's just got to be tough. But anyhow, David, thank you very much.
I love TOM. It's been, I guess, my convention that I've attended all my life.
Yeah.
Because it's close to where I live.
Sure.
You know. And,
well, Oklahoma is that sixth flag over Texas.
Exactly.
You know?
And you guys are just doing an incredible job. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you for all that you contribute. Like I said, with the backdrops, because I know you've...
We haven't got my bill yet. I ain't got my bill yet.
But you have in the past. Kidding. This is not just the first time. We've had a lot of things that you have come. And
yeah,
you did your show, I think, a few years ago.
Yeah, in Fort Worth, I brought all the production equipment in and the stage set. And it was fun.
Yeah.
My crew and everything.
Yeah.
David Hire arranged that. So
if people want to see you, follow you, or see a show, where can they look at your website in order to find out where you might be near their home? Because you travel coast to coast.
Yeah, my website's theworldofmagic.com. David Hire and I, it's theartandmagic.com. Or
and
maybe it's magic and art.
Okay.
Like, it's one of them.
And that will have a listing also then of tour dates?
You know, I don't know if Dave's updated it, but probably.
Okay, eventually.
Probably.
So you can check that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all right. Well, thanks
good.
So much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
That was David Thomas wrapping up part two of our chat. Thanks very much. And so for the Magic Court, this is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're just getting ready for the final evening show. I'm here with one of the performers from the first evening show, actually Trigg Watson. Hello there, Trigg.
Hello there, Scott.
Glad to have you on the podcast over here. Not only as a performer, but just also talk a little bit about Penn & Teller.
Sure.
What was that experience like?
It was great. You
working on Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd you get called? What'd you do? How'd you get on? And
I'll try to answer one of them. So I got an email. I don't know how they got my name. I was fortunate enough for them to reach out to me. I think it was early on in the U.S. It was the first season that they'd done in the U.S., so they were looking for acts, and I guess someone recommended me, perhaps. But in terms of, you know, the experience on the show, you know, it's rare that a TV show is being, you know, produced and run by magicians.
Yeah.
So as a result, you know,
Penn and Teller, Mike Close and Johnny Thompson, other guys are actually the ones.
Yeah, and Penn and Teller being, you know, kind of the heads of that. You know, sure. They just treat you differently when they know what performers like us need, both in terms of how to set us up for success on stage, and also just how to, you know, make us feel comfortable, you know, before, during, and after. So,
and how was that? What did they do to make you feel comfortable?
Well, you know, paying us a nice fee that more than I've gotten in the past for other TV reality shows, mm-hmm. you know, that feature a lot of magicians. Rehearsals, great check rehearsals, having the magic consultants at our disposal.
Lodging.
Yeah, lodging, yeah. Letting us have our entire act, you know, 5, 6, 7 minute act be filmed in total and not be cut up and edited constantly.
Right. So they kind of treat you like a star in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, on AGT or other shows like that, you know, you have 90 seconds, and you know, they just know what magicians need to make their act shine. Mm-hmm. So that was really a positive experience.
And so then getting up to that moment, did you have a little bit of butterflies, I guess, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'd never been on national television before and never been in a studio audience sort of environment, so that was a little bit nerve-wracking, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I enjoyed myself, but it was another level.
On stage of the Rio, where the Penn
and Teller
Theater,
right? On stage of the Rio Theater, yep. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously, you know, when you know that, you know, millions of people are going to see this, you know, there is a certain level of butterflies that happen.
But there are millions of people who've seen your YouTube videos.
Well, sure, but there's something about national television that's a little different. I mean, you know, the lights and, you know, having it in one take, you know, that's just, you know, another level. And it's about experience. You know, I'd never been in that environment before.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, when you're talking about AGT, have you actually tried out for AGT or not?
I've strongly considered it in the past and decided to hold off, but I may do it in the future.
Most of us are thinking, well, what can we get out of that? In other words, that like Kevin James thinking I want to put butts in the seats and so
correct.
I can sell more tickets,
yep.
or Nathan Burton, some of these other guys, or Murray Sawchuk. So, like, I know I've gotten phone calls also, you know, would you come and try out? It's like, I don't have anything to gain from this. I mean, I
right.
really don't. Sure, I'd like to have $1 million, but I don't want to have a show. I mean, at
right.
my age, I'm not interested in going to Vegas and having a show, but,
right.
you know, you might have an agenda.
Yes,
what is your
absolutely.
Future? What do you want to do? What's your
I want
goal?
To tour with a one-man show.
Okay.
So I want to have enough of a name to where, you know, I can sell tickets.
Sure.
And that part of that is having enough of an online following to do so. So, you know, while winning would be lovely on AGT, the goal really is the exposure and the opportunity to loop people into online media content that already exists. So, you know, if people see me on AGT, you know, that exposure, I hope they'll then Google me and then find that, like, wow, this guy has some awesome. This guy has yeah. some awesome videos on YouTube. Oh, he's got some upcoming show dates. You know, so I have an engine for them to just kind of roll into.
Would you work on college circuit or anything?
I would like to. That's kind yeah. of that. I kind of took a side route and yeah. I had some cruise ship opportunities fall in my lap, and I've been working cruises outside of my corporate bookings mm-hmm. the past year. But the next market to attack for me is definitely colleges. So
how do you like the TAOM convention? I mean, I know that I've known you since you were in high school. Or
yeah,
just a kid.
One of the great things about TAOM, it really does feel like a family.
It
Everyone
a family.
Knows each other really
yeah,
well.
Sure.
So, you know, I had trouble choosing a volunteer that I didn't know the first night of the show
yeah.
because you look out into the audience and everyone, you know,
yeah.
you've had a conversation with. So that's really special. I think that's the highlight for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've been coming for, like, this is what, for you, maybe your 15th year or something?
Not that much, but I mean, I
at
my
least
first,
10.
Yeah, well, my first, not even that, but my first TAOM was 2008, and
oh,
I competed
okay.
on stage
okay.
and ended up winning that year and attended and performed at several TAOMs after that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun, you know, as, you know, I've in the time that I've been coming to TAOMs, I've been in college or had a day job and now doing magic full time. It's kind of fun to every year come back and sort of share what I'm up to because
sure.
I've got people that, you know, have seen me perform before and they get to kind of see the progress and sort of see the journey and the progression that I'm making. And it's just kind of fun to be able to, it's like going back over to grandparents' house and showing all the pictures of what you've been doing that semester.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I kind of, it's in some way I feel
exactly.
that way with TAOM.
Yeah, just like we were talking yesterday about like the Midnight Madness show that we have.
Yes.
That you were working on something last year was kind of a work in progress.
Douglas, yes. Which you performed on the stage this
year. I did, and it, and it came a long way over the course of the year. It's exactly. It's fun to share that journey.
Yeah, and that was fun. It's kind of nice to see that progression over there.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, Trigg, good luck in the future over there. And
thanks.
That, whatever that your heart desires, I hope that you succeed beyond your wildest imagination.
Thank you, Scott.
There,
so. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
Because I think a lot of you, and I will do anything I can to help promote you.
Well, thank you very much.
Because well. If you guys haven't seen Trigg, I'm going to try to put his one of his YouTube videos on the blog. So go to the magicwordpodcast.com, and that way you can click on that and watch something cool that he does.
Because
he's a great magician, and you guys will enjoy him. He's boy, he's really good. I don't know. You just watch the video. You got to see it. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Trigg Watson. This is Scotty out. All right, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and the evening show is over. We're sitting here in the President's Party, and I'm here with John Dallinger and Dal Sanders. Dal was one of the performers. We're going to talk with him a little bit later. But I want also to remember that on the first day, we were talking to John Dallinger about the contest, and at the time, you weren't. This was going to be one of your first contests, and you
won the contest, number one.
Number one, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It was not just a trophy, but it was Cash Award also.
Cash Award also, yes.
That was a kind of a new thing, I think, for us this year, that we had a Kickstarter, a GoFundMe program, and plus so we had like, I don't know, what, $1,300 in that, and then some of the clubs had given some money.
Yes.
And so they split that among the... so how much did you actually end up...
It was over $600 and less than $20,000.
So, it's as far as taxes go, no problem about that.
Right.
Yes, but it was a beautiful trophy that you won.
It is a very nice
trophy. You are excited beyond means.
I am super, super duper excited.
Now, Dal Sanders is the past president of the National Organization of the Society of American Magicians, and next year is going to be their combined convention, and so I put this on because I wanted to get you to say this again.
Okay. Well, John, I saw you in San Antonio, at the IBM convention, and I saw you again here, and you have improved so much in what, that's 2 months. I mean, the act, it's almost like a brand new act, and I was just floored. You were by far the easy bet to win, at least on the show that I saw, and I know you did it four times, but the one that I saw was fantastic. I really think you should compete at the IBM SAM combined convention next year and go for the North American
qualifier.
Yes.
I think it would definitely be an experience.
Wouldn't that be something? And then if you won and you were qualified to go to South Korea?
Oh my gosh.
Would you?
I went to high school in South Korea.
Did you? Oh, well, so it's no big deal for you.
No big deal. So forget it. I've already been there. But well, no, that would be an experience. And I just wanted to say, and we talked about this earlier, that the reason that I improved is because of the input I got from the people at my club.
It's important to belong to clubs.
And the feedback I got from IBM, and so that was my goal, was to improve, and that was the reason I competed at IBM, is to see what competing felt like and to see where I could improve and wrap it up. And if I can wrap it up some more, I'll certainly try, but it'll take some more feedback, and that's what I'll try to find out from the judges.
Well, you've got about 11 more months to get ready now. So if you improve that much in 2 months, think what you can do in 11.
Well, he was under fire at that point, and that's a lot of times whenever that you're behind the gun, you really work hard and even harder to polish that.
I got about 6 months to convince my wife to let me go, it's all part of the plan.
Before they raise the price, because you get a good deal, I think,
That's right.
How much is it right now to register? You don't know. Have to go to the website and see.
Okay, you'll have to cut that part out because I hate to look like I don't know things. I know it just had a price increase on September 1st.
Okay, that's what I was thinking they did as well. It's going to be a very good convention, I know. Well, congratulations then, John.
Thank you, Scott.
That's great. Again, I think that you had deserved that as well. So you don't have the trophy with you. You're walking around with it.
No, I got the little medal on my chest, though.
Well, I'm going to take a picture with you with that, then, so that way I can post that one to go along with the one I took the other day when you didn't have the trophy.
Well,
So congratulations, and thank you very much for competing and also for coming to the club meetings and everything. And I think, again, that's an important thing, like Dal would agree, for your assembly, to attend the assembly and your ring meetings, so this way that you can get the kind of support and suggestions from your friends who encourage you to compete and encourage you to say, you might trim this or do that, lengthen this, or, you just polish the edges of it a little bit better all the time.
It's all been polished every time you do it.
So good. All right. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Dallinger and Dal Sanders. Scotty out.
I can't speak about my own show.
No, but I just want to talk about the others. You know, where this is, we're in the president's party right now.
Well, the others, I don't watch the others because I'm afraid they're better than me, so I never look at them.
So you don't watch the other show. So we got David Stone with us then right now. And let me just say about it. I thought it was a very funny show, and there was a highlight. I thought the whole evening show was very good. Dick Olson's with me also.
I was not the highlight. I was the only one. You saw my show in my room. You didn't see the real show, Scott. Come on.
I saw the private show, I guess.
Oh, you saw the private show, absolutely.
Putting on your shirt there. I thought it was very funny. I thought the lecture was very good, the close-up today. I mean, today was the David Stone day, it seems like, because you did everything. You hadn't done anything the last couple days. Today was the only day you did it all with the lecture and the close-up contest, the professional close-up show, and then this. And so
It was a busy day.
Really it was a busy day. Now, you have a lot of new stuff that you're selling then right now, like in your lecture. And the newest thing was the tool was great and all the other things. But there's I just bought one.
Mirage. I have Mirage. I have Hologram. I have Zenith. Zenith.
Zenith.
Yeah, Zenith. I have a Mirage, Hologram. I have some new stuff. I've been working for the last 2 years on making all the tricks I wanted to do, but I never had time to produce because I was busy on lecturing and doing shows. So the last 2 years, I stopped everything and I started to finish what I wanted to finish. You know?
Okay.
Because if you wait for too long,
somebody else is going to put it out.
Yeah, someone else is going to release something new that will be better than what you created or blah blah. So
right. Well, you had a lot of really good stuff. So yeah, it has been just a little while since I've last seen you kind of on the convention circuit and the lectures and everything. So you're just getting back out. You're going to start to go out now and with all your new stuff, I guess. You're going to go to some other conventions this next year.
Actually, I'm working with JB Dumas. You know JB Dumas, he's a French magician working in Asia, for Lu Shen, for Yif, for Cyril Takayama. He's a consultant, and we are working together on new tricks to release. And he's the creator of Mirage. You know Mirage, the whole pack of cards that vanish.
Okay.
You have seen it?
I have, but explain it to the other people who are listening to the podcast.
It's when you have a whole deck of cards that openly, visually, vanish into one card.
Right. It looks like you have a whole deck of cards, and then it becomes
melting into one card, and then you can do the opposite, the reverse. We can reproduce openly, but it's no light tricks or black arts things, blah blah. Right. You can do it live for real table hopping.
Yeah,
it works. People can see it, and they are what? That's amazing. I've done it every time in bars. I like this kind of stuff. And JB Dumas and myself are working for the next 2 years on this to release this kind of effect.
Yeah,
takes a lot of time. But
and the other one, the Zenith, is the one that's it's a beautiful idea for a card on ceiling. And I hadn't thought about the card on wall that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Whenever you're working outside, or you're doing something? I guess where there's not a ceiling.
To be honest, card on wall for lay people is stronger visually. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I have no idea why, but they always are much impressed than the card on the ceiling. And for me, card on the ceiling is more difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand. It's because I've been conditioned as a magician to do card on the ceiling. But when you do card on the wall with Zenith, which means that you can't miss it.
Right.
People are, wow, have you seen how I've done it in the lecture?
Yes.
I don't even look. I just do that. And you have a lot of people, and I'm stressful. But it works.
Now, I thought it was interesting. You say you have to use a different kind of wax. Then instead of like the Michael Lamar wax he uses for the ceiling, you have something that's a different kind of wax for outdoors? Because the walls are different, maybe, or something.
I use Michael Lamar wax.
For outdoors, too?
Inside. For indoor magic, I use Michael Lamar wax because it's the best one. And for outdoor, when I perform outside, I use Dave Ponsal wax. Because indoor, my Kalama works stay perfectly, but outdoor, if it's a little bit cold, if it's under 7 degrees, mm-hmm. Celsius degree, I don't know Fahrenheit degree, the wax becomes very, very tough, mm-hmm. and it doesn't stick anymore. Dave Ponsal watch will be perfect outdoor, because even if it's a little bit cold, it stays melt.
Now, what kind of wax? Somebody say it again. What kind of wax?
Dave Ponsal Prop Dog wax.
Spell that.
Prop Dog.
Prop by Prop Dog.
Yeah, Prop Dog. It's famous. There are two waxes. It's like Apple and Pepsi and Coke.
Okay.
Apple and Samsung.
Yeah.
There is Michael Hammer wax and Dave Ponsal wax.
Okay.
People know that. And you look for on online Google.
Okay.
But the problem is that with Dave Ponsal wax indoor, when it's too hot, when too warm, it becomes too flappy.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't stick anymore.
Gotcha.
That's why I use both, one for outdoor, one for indoor.
Depends on the temperature then.
Yep, and I'm happy and I make both of my friends happy.
That's a good point. Very good. Well, now it's getting closer to the end of the year. Are you going to be coming back to the States or doing anything here in the U.S., or are you going to be doing most things overseas?
I don't know. I live in the U.S., I feel.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're over here a lot.
Texas is almost my home now.
Yeah, well, we feel that you're almost a Texan, you know, as much as
I don't know. Maybe depending how will be the next vote. Because maybe that was my last show in America tonight, you know. So thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Maybe I will never be able to come back and cross the wall. I don't know.
It depends, yeah. It depends. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for putting on a good show tonight. We all enjoyed it. And so until next time.
Yeah.
And good luck.
So.
Okay. That was David Stone. This is Scotty out.